trophy retained. And retained by Real Madrid. 12 times winners now.
Real Madrid will now try to win a third successive title with the competition's record scorer front and centre as usual.
To achieve 100 goals in the Champions League for me was a dream. Every year, the same challenge, to win everything if it's possible.
Cristiano Ronaldo and Real Madrid have again been drawn with Dortmund, with other big group stage head-to-heads to come between Barcelona and Juventus, Bayern and Paris, plus Chelsea Atletico. You'll hear from Marco Asensio, Gigi Buffon and Paul Pogba in our comprehensive preview. And don't forget that you can listen to all the UEFA Champions League action throughout the season with us here on Matchday Live. Yes, join us from 1930 CET on every night to the UEFA Champions League on the official UEFA Champions League app or via the Match Centre on UEFA.com from your desktop or mobile device. I'm Rob Daly, and over the course of this special Matchday Live podcast, we're going to bring you a full preview of this year's UEFA Champions League group stage. Alongside me are UEFA.com's European football expert Andy Brassel and Matchday Live commentator Phil Blacker. Welcome to both of you. Phil, an exciting season ahead.
Really is, Rob. Yeah, can't wait. It's a wonderful time of the season, isn't it? The anticipation as we get ready for the start of the group stage.
Real Madrid, having broken UEFA Champions League history last season by retaining the trophy for the first time in the UEFA Champions League era, look set fair to maybe do it again. I don't think I've come into any season and there is a stacked field, but with such a strong feeling that there is a major favourite. You know, this is a team that not just won the UEFA Champions League in emphatic style in Cardiff back in June, but seems to have a succession plan. Everything's stacked up for the future as well.
That's the question we've been putting to listeners ahead of the start of the new season. Hashtag Matchday Live on Twitter. Who do you think is going to win the UEFA Champions League? Behujar says a team from Manchester, if not Paris Saint-Germain. Of course, United are back in the competition. More on them in a moment. And Babby Nanny says Paris Saint-Germain are the favourites this season, but I still believe Real Madrid has it all it takes to win again this year. Before we look at eight new UEFA Champions League groups, here's a quick reminder of how the trophy was won last season.
Carvajal steaming up on the overlap. The pull back to Ronaldo! Ronaldo scores for Real Madrid! Their first chance of the final! And it's Ronaldo once again on the biggest stage of all. Higuain, here's Mandzukic. Oh, he goes for goal! Sensational equaliser! Mandzukic with the overhead kick! Beats Navas to level for Juventus. That is a world-class finish. Cross shot, it was blocked. Comes back out. Casemiro thumped it in! And Real Madrid have the lead again! It may have taken a slight deflection. Buffon dived full length to his right, but could not keep it out. And Casemiro is the man for Madrid. Now Modric is running onto a ball down the right. And crossing, and Ronaldo's there! 3-1 to Real Madrid, and the 12th title is right within their grasp. Ronaldo with his second goal of the final. He's writing yet more history for Real Madrid. Marcelo with a lovely turn on the byline. Maybe he can pull one back. It's four! And Real Madrid have clinched the 12th title, and Marco Asensio was there to side-foot home a 4-1 victory against the best defence in the competition. Juventus broken-hearted, Real Madrid triumphant again.
It was an amazing feeling for us, especially we had extra motivation for this final, knowing that we can be the first team to defend title, and on the end we did it. I think we played extremely well, especially second half, leaving Juventus no chance in the final.
You heard Matchday Live's Richard Connolly on commentary and then Luka Modric reflecting on Real Madrid's victory in the final in Cardiff. And now they're looking to do something even more unthinkable and win it for a third season in a row. Andy, what seemed frightening for me about Real Madrid last season and their quality was actually that they got stronger despite the fact that they were playing more and more games as the season went on.
I think it might work out, certainly in the case of Cristiano Ronaldo, the same way this season. I mean, he had a sort of false start to last season, not playing a first team game until the middle of September. And because of his suspension in the Spanish Super Cup, a similar thing will happen this season. And he said himself he had so much more in the tank at the back end of last season. But I do feel it's not just about Ronaldo, whereas he used to be the player who dragged his team on, whether it be Manchester United, Real Madrid or Portugal. Now he's just another subordinate cog in this machine. And I think, you know, you talk about their improvement. Well, look at how far Asensio, who played that very pleasing cameo in the UEFA Champions League final, and Isco have moved on further at the start of this campaign. It just seems there's no limit to how much they can improve.
We're going to hear from Asensio a little bit later on. Phil, in that final, just a quick look back at that. Everyone thought that was going to be a very even contest. Really, Real Madrid were far superior to Juventus on the day.
Dominance in the end, weren't they? Against, as Richard mentioned in commentary, the best defence in the competition last season up until that point. I mean, I predicted that was Juventus's chance. That was their year. I really thought they were actually going to go on and win that final. But the manner in which Real Madrid came through to clinch those back-to-back trophies, and as you've kind of touched on, I think they've only got stronger since then. Not in terms of the new signings. They haven't made the sort of statement signings that a lot of their rivals have made ahead of this year's competition, but they've kept their stars together. They have the young players like Asensio coming through and improving. I could see them making it three in a row. It was a hugely impressive achievement last year.
OK, we'll focus on Real Madrid a little bit later on. Of course, they beat Manchester United in the UEFA Super Cup as well. Stand by for our detailed preview of the UEFA Champions League group stage. That's next.
Since it began in 1992, the UEFA Champions League has produced some of the greatest matches in the history of the game. Watch highlights of some of the best by heading to the dedicated history section on UEFA.com.
So it should be another tremendous season in the UEFA Champions League with plenty of great group stage matches to come. Let's focus on those eight brand new groups beginning at the beginning with Group A, featuring Benfica, Manchester United, Basel and CSKA Moskva. Manchester United midfielder Paul Pogba can't wait to return to UEFA Champions League action.
I've missed it. It's the best competition out there and it puts you up against the best teams and players. To win the best things, you've always got to face and beat the best. So we're relishing it and we'll do our best. We always have goals. Of course, we want to win the Premier League. We want to win the UEFA Champions League. We want to win everything. We know that we can't always win, but we want to go as far as possible. If you enjoy it and have fun, with all of that together, the rest will come naturally.
Manchester United back in the UEFA Champions League. They, of course, qualified by winning the UEFA Europa League last season, beating Ajax in the final. Phil, given the business they've done, are Manchester United equipped to go deep into the competition this season?
I genuinely think they are. I think there's a real sense of anticipation about their return, fueled, of course, by a year away, not being involved in the competition last year, has maybe only added to the motivation as that sense of what they were missing. It was a risky policy, really, by Jose Mourinho last season, because I think he realised fairly far out in the domestic season that the best chance to qualify was by winning the UEFA Europa League, only sixth place in the Premier League. But yeah, the business done since then, they look so much stronger to me. They're starting the season in fine form. They'll come into the competition confident after not yet dropping a point in the Premier League. Lukaku has slotted straight into the side, scoring goals. I think getting Ibrahimovic back on board in the later stages of the competition, he's been registered, he would be available once he's fit again. And the signing of Nemanja Matic, equally important, I think gives a bit more balance to the side, allows Pogba to get further forward. He started scoring goals at the start of the season as well. It's all coming together, I think, for Manchester United. And maybe that stems from Jose Mourinho. And there's certainly a sense that he's a different man, it seems, at the start of this season, much more relaxed. I think he's got the players and the squad at his disposal that he's wanted, which maybe he didn't have last year. I think this is exciting start of exciting times for Manchester United.
Well, I think the main difference has been Romelu Lukaku. It may seem an obvious one, but Manchester United dominated a lot of games in the Premier League last season without being able to finish it off, especially at Old Trafford. And I think it's pertinent, especially when they're starting their UEFA Champions League campaign at Old Trafford, that's something that will maybe enable them to get off on the right foot here against a Basel team who really have got a little bit to prove. Of course, they're imperious in domestic competition. That is a very fresh, new look to Basel. They've lost some big players over the last couple of years. You know, you think of Fabian Scher, Jan Sommer, Fabian Frey, players like that. And Ricky van Volswinkel, of course, has got a lot of experience leading from the front. But their coach, Rafael Vicky, who knows the UEFA Youth League very well, having managed Basel's representative side in that, this is a big step up for him as well as for the rest of the team.
They're going to have a difficult job, Basel, containing Romelu Lukaku when the two sides meet in the competition this season. Something Phil mentioned there, the signing of Nemanja Matic. Chelsea allowed him to go to Old Trafford. Were you surprised by that? And do you think it is going to have a major role, impact on the way that Paul Pogba plays this season?
Very surprised. Pogba always needed that foil and always hadn't needed that foil. He plays better for France when he has N'Golo Kante next to him. Of course, Nemanja Matic, a slightly different sort of player. But I think for a team like Manchester United, especially at home, especially wanting to play on the front foot, Matic is almost a trailblazer for a new type of defensive midfielder and has been ever since he came through at Benfica. Someone who doesn't just break up the play, but has quite playmakerish qualities, who can bring the ball over the halfway line, who can go round people, who can eat up ground with that long stride of his. So I think for a side like Manchester United, who really want to lay down a marker on their return to the UEFA Champions League, he could be important too.
You could argue it is a favourable group for Manchester United. It could have been far tougher looking at some of the draws that we'll get to in a moment. They take on CSKA Moskva, a team with great experience in the competition as well, Phil. How will the Russian side do, having failed to defend their title last season?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a difficult one for CSKA Moskva. They haven't had a great start to the domestic season this time around either, having lost the title to Spartak. Setup may be more adventurous under Viktor Gonchurenko than perhaps they were under Leonid Slutsky. Not necessarily sure that is going to play to their strengths, though, in this group. They've still got the spine of the side, but I think maybe they're a year or so beyond their best now, and they haven't necessarily got that succession in place that I can see. They have individuals like Golovin in the midfield, I think, is an excellent player. This is going to be a big stage for him to impress. But the likes of Akinfeev at the back, the Berezutskis, of course, I just think with the pace and power of Lukaku that we've mentioned, I think they could really have a job on.
I mean, they almost make no signings or sell any players anyway, but they've done exactly the same this summer. Very few recruits in and out. You can't say that about Benfica, Andy, in truth, because Victor Lindelof will face his former club with Manchester United, having joined them this summer.
Yes.
And there's been a fair bit of movement in and out of the club, even up to the end of the transfer window.
That's what Benfica do, and they have done since the days of Jorge Jesus. It's so incredibly impressive, the fact that they managed to foster this winning culture, sell an enormous amount of players at a great profit, who they've developed expertly at the end of each season, and then get at it again. You know, they're going for a fifth successive Liga title in Portugal, which is unprecedented in the modern era, when Porto before that had dominated so much in the past 25 years. And it's something that Rui Vitória has only continued. He's, of course, managed to make them successful at UEFA Champions League level as well. You know, they got to the second round last season, and the year before that, they gave Bayern a really, really good game, two really good games in the quarterfinals. So Vitória is happy to keep them going and all fronts. I think what's interesting, you talk about those changes, they still have a lot of energy in that team. You look at Pizzi in midfield particularly, who pulls all the strings, who's great from set pieces. And having lost Kostas Mitroglou to Marseille, who had that tremendous partnership with Jonas, of course, they've got in Gabriel Barbosa from Inter. And so you look at him, you look at Raul Jimenez as well, and you think there's just that little bit of extra pace in the front of Benfica. Their tradition, the whole tradition of the club, is to be attacking, daring, and they have the players at the sharp end who can really do that.
So here are the fixtures for match day one on Tuesday, the 12th of September. Benfica host CSKA Moskva, and Basel will go to Manchester United. It's going to be one of our featured games on Match Day Live. Chris Smalling's even tweeted, "Can't wait to get back into the UEFA Champions League under the light at Old Trafford." So I would probably go here for Manchester United and Benfica to come through the group. What are we saying here, James?
Same. I couldn't disagree with that, but I do see Basel as a potential surprise package. If anybody's going to upset the top two, it will be Basel.
They have done it before, haven't they? That Real Madrid-Liverpool group a few years ago, and they knocked Manchester United out of Europe as well in 2011-12, I think. So the potential there. So that is Group A. OK, let's look at Group B now. What a section this is. Bayern, Paris Saint-Germain, Anderlecht, and Celtic as well. Jerome Boateng, the German international defender of Bayern, says looking forward to thrilling nights in the group stage. And we're all looking, really, when Bayern and Paris Saint-Germain will eventually take on each other once again. Most notably, Andy, we have Carlo Ancelotti here taking on one of his many former employers.
Yeah, we do. And Paris Saint-Germain, I've really missed him since he went. You know, he's a coach who had the sort of level of profile for Paris that they wanted, as well as the easy touch that you need to deal with big players sometimes. So I'm sure a few Paris minds will flip back to the days of Ancelotti being at the club when Bayern come into town. You know, these are two clubs who see their destiny as going the whole way in the UEFA Champions League. So I think when we look at the group stages, we don't just look at the qualifiers. We look at these enormous matches and think it's an opportunity for these clubs who have great pride and great ambitions to make a real statement.
I mean, Paris Saint-Germain have arguably fallen a little bit short in their expectations of how they're doing this competition. And perhaps that's what drove them to sign Neymar and Kylian Mbappe, the two biggest transfers of the summer. Do you think it really puts them among the favourites to win it, Phil?
Personnel-wise, it has to do. You look at their squad, certainly the starting 11. I'm still yet to be convinced maybe about the strength and depth in certain areas of the squad, but the attacking talent that they got, absolutely awesome. Yeah, it was a huge disappointment. Of course, it was last season, not just going out at the round of 16, but the manner in which they went out after that remarkable game against Barcelona. Neymar was integral to their exit from the competition.
Yep.
So how do you respond? You go out and sign him and you build a team around him and then bring in Mbappe as well, who was outstanding en route to the semi-finals with Monaco last season. So, of course, because of that, Paris have to be up there as genuine contenders. But there's a bit of work to do, I think, to build that team, given how it's, you know, that the players have just come in relatively late in pre-season. How do you fit them into the right system? Is there the strength in depth? I still think maybe they can be got out at the back. So it's far from a foregone conclusion, but the expectation, the demands in Paris are that they are genuine contenders this season.
Yeah, and I do think those are concerns. That they obviously wanted an extra holding midfielder to give that bit of support and help to Marco Verratti and the platform for him to get on with his passing, and they didn't get that player. And also they didn't get a new goalkeeper. I think they've not found someone to really match Salvatore Sidigu, who gave them great service. Since he's gone away, neither Kevin Trapp nor Alphonse Areola has really established themselves. But that said, I don't have any worries about the front three clicking. Some people have said, well, how are they going to fit Cavani, Mbappe and Neymar into the same team? Well, easy. Cavani in the centre, Neymar on the left, Mbappe on the right. And I spoke to Kylian Mbappe at some length for UEFA Champions League Weekly last season, and he was saying one of the things he liked most about playing with Radamel Falcao is having that fixed position centre-forward gave him the opportunity to have that freedom, use his pace down the channels as well, and be able to roam a little bit. Obviously, the same will be the case of Neymar. So I think Mbappe's really going to enjoy playing with Cavani, who's a striker of similar standing to Falcao. And for the rest of us, well, it's going to be fantastic.
Yeah,
to watch.
It is. And I think you're absolutely right about Mbappe. I think watching him in the later stages of the competition, where he really came into the Monaco side, he dropped deep. He would run in behind. He's not a one-dimensional forward, so he really can play anywhere in that front three. Let's get on to Bayern, who've picked up James Rodriguez on loan. That's probably their biggest high-profile name signing, if you like. Nicolas Ulin, Sebastian Rudi coming in from Hoffenheim as well. Phil, they look relatively well-equipped once again.
They're always there or thereabouts, and I think that will be the case again this time. The signing of James Rodriguez is a really interesting one because I'm not quite sure how he's going to fit into that side.
Ancelotti,
he's got a point to prove, hasn't he?
Yeah, Ancelotti said he might play on the wing because Thomas Müller has been playing 10, the number 10 position, so is Thiago. Where do you feel is James' best position?
Well, I think 10 is probably, from what I've seen, his best role, but I'm not sure he's going to get a run in this Bayern side in that particular position. And I do think, as a player himself, given the injury issues and loss of form a little bit, he wasn't always under favour at Real Madrid, he's got a point to prove. It could be an inspired signing. You know, if he finds that best form, he will bring a lot to this Bayern team. But I'm just a little bit concerned when we get into the latter stages of the competition. I don't think it'll be an issue in the group because I think they and Paris will progress pretty comfortably. But Philipp Lahm, Xabi Alonso, two wonderful players, two of my favourite players probably in recent seasons in the UEFA Champions League, departing, how they get on without them. You know, they're huge players to try and replace. Collectively, they have the strength in the squad, but I'm not sure they're stronger than in previous seasons, if you see what I mean.
Of course, that's where both Thomas Müller and Manuel Neuer are important. Mm. Even though Neuer wasn't a club product, of course, he came through Schalke. The sense is that he's got that similar Bayern DNA that those two aforementioned players did and Thomas Müller has. So even though Müller's not always a pick in the 11, I agree with Phil, I think he's going to be as important in the dressing room as he ever has. I think there's a lot to be excited about this Bayern side. I think Corentin Tolisso, who of course was a Bundesliga record transfer, has started very well. He's terrific to watch, made a big dent in both the UEFA Champions League and the UEFA Europa League with Lyon last season. Of course, he's got some big goals, including ones against Roma, Juventus. He's up for the very biggest games. He's difficult difficult to pick up when he's drifting into the penalty area. Funnily enough, one of the players you mentioned, Rob, Sebastian Rudi, I think a lot will rely on him because Bayern are so forward-focused that I just wonder if their defence is a little bit overexposed. So that makes Rudi a very, very important player.
I didn't think he'd be
player.
A starter, but he looks immediately important to Bayern.
It does, and you know, it's like Phil was saying, where do you fit in James? And then on top of that, you've got Thiago, you've got
Vidal,
Thomas Müller, Vidal, you have Tolisso. It's going to be interesting seeing especially the games between Paris and Bayern because to me they both look very open.
Yeah, they do. Let's look at the other sides in the group here. Andy, quickly tell us about Anderlecht. I know Yuri Tielemans is one of many senior departures in terms of playing personnel at Anderlecht. Do they have any chance, you think, of getting out the group?
I think it's going to be very, very hard for them because, of course, Bayern and Paris are two of the biggest names in the competition. And Anderlecht haven't started this season particularly well
either.
I mean, they have held on to some key players, which is important, even if Tielemans has gone. Leander Dendonk has stayed. Hani stayed, who was hugely impressive in those two UEFA Europa League games against Manchester United. But, you know, it is a huge step up for them. And, of course, they're going to be trying to claw back ground domestically as well.
Celtic, meanwhile, Moussa Dembélé expected not to be fit for the first game. He has missed the start of the season. Celtic host Paris Saint-Germain. And, Phil, you've seen a fair bit of Celtic in recent times. They impressed in the UEFA Champions League last season in a tricky group as well.
They did, and probably cursing their luck again. Last year, Barcelona, Manchester City and Gladbach in the same group. And now they're in with Bayern and Paris as well. So, hugely difficult task for Brendan Rodgers' side, but they were impressive for the most part in qualifying. I commentated on the playoff round against Astana. Of course, the 5-0 win in the first leg got the job done there. It was quite a nervy night, as it turned into, actually, in Kazakhstan, as they lost 4-3. Didn't really tell the whole story. They were 4-1 down, and at one stage, you thought they might be caving in. So I think that game highlighted some real defensive deficiencies, which the likes of Paris and Bayern will be looking to prey on. So strong domestically. Dembélé coming back, I think, probably will only miss, we understand at the moment, the first group game. And Patrick Roberts returning on loan from Manchester City for another season is going to be important for them. So I think realistically, though, it's going to be between Celtic and Anderlecht to see who can make it into third spot in the UEFA Europa League.
Well, the fixtures are like this. Then Tuesday, the 12th of September, Celtic host Paris Saint-Germain and Anderlecht face that tough first trip to Munich as they take on Bayern. Eva says that Bayern have the best squad in the world at the moment on Twitter. Just need to find the right formation, the very thing we've been talking about. And surprisingly, Paris SG Forever has tweeted that Paris Saint-Germain are going to win it, accompanied by a big picture of Neymar, Mbappe and Cavani. So we're expecting Bayern and Paris Saint-Germain to get through?
Yes.
Yes.
Very good. That is Group B. This is Group C then. Chelsea, Atletico, Roma and Karabakh of Azerbaijan, the first side from that country to ever qualify for the group stage. A really tough, evenly balanced section, this one. After falling at the semi-final stage to Real Madrid last season, Atletico captain Gabi says they are aiming high once more.
I don't know what the club's goals are, but I can tell you what the team's goals are. And this team wants to win the UEFA Champions League. And we all dream about lifting that trophy. It's very difficult, of course, and just one bad day, like the one we had at the Bernabeu last season, leaves you out of the competition. But this club deserves to win the UEFA Champions League, and we won't give up until we've won it. It would mean many years of history behind us, many years of our fans' history, who've dreamt about that UEFA Champions League title, and it would be the cherry on top, as far as my career is concerned.
Let's start with Atletico then. 2014 and 2016 runners-up, of course, and Diego Simeone has just signed a new contract extension as well with the club. Andy, they haven't been able to bring in new players because of the registration ban still in place.
Yes.
Are Atletico strongly equipped enough to compete and go into the latter stages of this competition?
Yes, and I think because of the registration ban, it's wise to look at their UEFA Champions League campaign to come in two separate phases, really, because they've already got some of the reinforcements lined up for January, including Vitolo, who I think is a player who's ideally suited to Atletico and what they want to do. He's an upgrade on what they've got. He's highly industrious. He won't need any time to pick up the Simeone credo, which I think is very, very important. I do wonder with Atletico if they've missed their best chance. Of course, they're still a formidable side. They've still got a wonderful understanding of how, especially knockout ties in the UEFA Champions League work. But I wonder, this side is getting a little bit older. And I just think maybe that they haven't got two different gears. They've got one way of playing. And that's why, for example, I would see Chelsea as quite comfortable winners in this group. Of course, we'll have to reassess with Atletico, as I said, when it comes to January. But I think a lot weighs on Antoine Griezmann, on Yannick Ferreira Carrasco, and Augusto Fernandes, who, of course, is coming off a big injury and back into midfield. And I think he can take a bit of the weight off Gabby, especially with Thiago moving on.
That new contract for Diego Simeone, Phil, that is a huge boost for the club, isn't it?
It is. A little, I think, unexpected, certainly in the context of the last year or so. I wouldn't have necessarily envisaged him pledging his future in the manner that he has. But the fact that he's done that and the fact that they've kept Griezmann, I think that is key, because there was huge transfer speculation the early part of the summer, end of last season, wasn't there, that he was likely to be on his way. And then that went very quiet, 16 goals last season. Probably at some stage in the season, once the transfer ban is lifted, we might see Diego Costa coming in, not part of Chelsea's squad in this group, of course. I think, and primarily because Simeone is staying and that uncertainty has ended now, I think Atletico will win this group. I think they're the strongest side in the section.
Excellent. Disagreement. That's what we want, guys. OK, so let's talk about Chelsea. Andy, why do you think they're so well-equipped? There was a little bit of scepticism about the business they've done, Antonio Conte's done this summer, but you think they're in a strong position?
Yeah, I'm not sure necessarily if they're stronger than last season. It would have been nice to see the players that have come, which I think are very, very good players, including, of course, Morata and Bakayoko. Would have been nice to supplement what they've already got. When you see Matic and Diego Costa going out of the picture, it means they're replacements instead, which I think leaves Chelsea at a slight disadvantage. Of course, we've seen Antonio Conte in the past with Juventus struggle to balance domestic commitments and UEFA Champions League commitments. Of course, they got to the semi-finals of the UEFA Europa League with Juventus, but I think it's clear that there's a gap between the two competitions. I don't think anyone would argue that. So this is a moment for Conte to step up and prove himself. What I would say is, in the early weeks of the season, he has shown, which I think perhaps people had forgotten in his time in England, his tactical adaptability. He is a tactical pragmatist. People say, oh, well, he's gone to three at the back. He will go with whatever he feels is the best for a particular game or for a particular situation. And some of those players, mainly Cesar Azpilicueta, Bakayoko, who, as I said, has come in and will become more and more important as he gets fitter, having come off that knee injury. Marcos Alonso, of course, has been really important for them too. And Morata, who's a really, really adaptable centre-forward. These are all players that give them tools to deal with different challenges. And for me, that's why they're the group favourites.
Morata is going to be the key, I think, for Chelsea, for me, how he fits in. I think he's going to have to shoulder an awful lot of responsibility, though. My major concern with Chelsea is the strength in depth in the squad. So impressive in the Premier League last year. I think that the starting 11 is as strong, if not stronger, with the additions that they've made. But I don't think the squad is. And of course, last year they didn't have any European commitments, not just in the UEFA Champions League. Didn't play in Europe at all. Conte, as Andy mentioned, has a point to prove in this competition. A couple of years with Juventus, quarterfinals, and then a group stage exit, I think. So a lot of the headlines made by the targets that they went for that they didn't get, it just seemed a little bit of a rush at the end. Did get Danny Drinkwater coming in, Zappa Costa as well on deadline day, but I'm just not quite convinced when you pit them against the side of the strength and European experience of Atletico, they're going to win the group. Having said that, I still think they'll qualify.
They've got Roma in this group, which is one of the teams you don't really want to be drawn with from a third seeded side. Andy, Roma have lost Mo Salah. Lots of people have seen that as well. How has Monchi, who has recently become sporting director there, gone about replacing Salah and improving that Roma squad?
Well, it's a very different role for him, and not just because he's someone who's a Sevilla lifer. You know, he was there as young reserve goalkeeper, and next thing he was the most prominent sporting director in all of Europe. So it's an adjustment for him as well as the club. And I do feel that their business was a little chaotic this season. As you said, losing Mo Salah is huge, because he is a player who just gave them their tempo. He made them attack games with the pace they did, and they haven't got a direct replacement for him, which for me is a big problem. Of course, Patrick Schick has got a great future and great potential. We might not see the best of him until a bit later in the group stage, because he's had no real pre-season to speak of. But I wonder where he fits. I think a lot rests on that midfield of Strootman, Nainggolan. Of course, Nainggolan out of the Belgian international team at the moment, which maybe gives him a little bit of a breather to attack these games with extra vigour. He's going to have to be their real leader, above and beyond even Daniele De Rossi, because, of course, no Francesco Totti this year. It's a new start for Roma on and off the pitch, but my feeling is that they're a little bit unfinished, and I can't see them giving Chelsea an Atletico any major problems.
Eusebio Di Francesco taking over from Luciano Spalletti this summer. And we have a team from Azerbaijan in the group stage for the first time, filling Karabakh, who people may recognise, people who dip in and out of European football, from the UEFA Europa League in recent years.
They do have experience in European competition, yeah, in that competition. They were the first side from Azerbaijan to win a group stage game in the UEFA Europa League a couple of seasons back, and they've impressed so far this season, came past Copenhagen on away goals in the playoff round. They've won all three league games domestically. They're on a real high coming into the competition, but I think the scale of achievement of qualifying for the group stage should not be underestimated, but I think it will be the extent of their achievement this season. But they could surprise a few people. I think they'll pick up the odd point here and there, but I can't see them contending for qualification.
OK, well, people on Twitter who've been messaging us are backing Chelsea to win the competition, like Daniel McKenzie, and someone called at Hazard Attack says, Chelsea will win it with a manager like Conte and a player like Eden Hazard injured for the start of the season. You can never count us out. OK, who's going through here? And let's have who's going through as group winners. I think we sort of almost established that before.
Chelsea, Atletico.
Atletico, Chelsea.
OK, very good.
I think Karabakh could have a pop for third place, actually.
Oh, really?
I do. Like I said, Roma, it all feels a little bit up in the air. Karabakh have got really great continuity. And Gurbanov, the coach, has been in charge for 9 years now. And as Phil was saying, getting past Copenhagen, who are the masters of coming from the second qualifying round all the way to the group, is hugely impressive.
Match day one, Roma host Atletico and Chelsea will welcome Karabakh to Stamford Bridge on Tuesday, the 12th of September. OK, let's look at Group D then. Juventus, Barcelona, Olympiacos and Sporting make up this section. Head-to-heads between the Bianconeri and Barcelona again. They met in the quarterfinals last season with Juve comfortably winning. But Barcelona beat Juventus 3-1 in that 2015 final. Juve came so close to giving Gigi Buffon his first UEFA Champions League winners medal last season. It's worth remembering, though, that Buffon will turn 40 in January. Many still feel he's at his brilliant best.
If there is a secret, I think that I continue to stay angry and foolish, and this is the one way that I know for to continue to play for the top level. To play for an amazing team like Juventus gives you a big motivation, and you can think that every goal is possible.
Hungry, foolish and very, very cool. Still Gigi Buffon looking for that UEFA Champions League winners' medal, lost in the 2017 final, of course, as well, to Real Madrid quite comfortably. And very notable business done there this transfer window, Andy. Leonardo Bonucci's departure, one of the many headlines to come out of Turin.
It was, and when we talked before about Bayern needing that leadership, that essence of the club, I think that's where they're really going to miss Bonucci. Of course, he's not just a top defender. I think that they're almost covered in that sense. You know, they've got the next generation coming through with Rugani ready to emerge, mm-hmm. and he's been ready to emerge for some time. And they've still got Giorgio Chiellini as well. But you think of how used to each other they are, the defence and Buffon. It's going to be a big leap. And I think the fact that they've brought in a bit more UEFA Champions League experience in Blaise Matuidi is really important as well. You look at Benedikt Höwedes from Schalke. He's no like-for-like replacement for Bonucci, but he's a Juventus kind of guy who surpasses limits, who's a real leader. You think of how he was in the 2014 FIFA World Cup for Germany. He was one of Germany's best players, playing out of position at left-back. And that's where I think Juventus have excelled in UEFA Champions League over the last couple of years, by having Patrice Evra, Dani Alves, not players necessarily that are going to play every game, but players who are winners. And that's really, really important to what Juventus are doing. So even though Bonucci leaving is a blow, you do feel that there's still a lot there that's going right. Matuidi, as well as a leader, can bring more substance to their midfield, which was perhaps lacking it last season. I don't think they'll go in with the same sort of system that they went in for the final. I felt that was a horse for a course. And of course, Paulo Dybala has started the season absolutely sensationally well, wearing the number 10 shirt now, which has not really had a genuine successor since Tevez. It never really sat well on Paul Pogba. So I think there are a lot of possibilities for them to go deep into this competition.
I've been quite impressed with the business that they've done, with maybe the exception of allowing the departure of Bonucci, because I think that's going to be a huge blow. Just having watched them fairly regularly in the knockout stages of the competition last season, he was absolutely integral to that defence, which was at that stage up until the final the best in the competition. Immediately after his departure, I think they looked pretty shaky defensively in the Italian Super Cup loss to Lazio. I think he's going to really take some replacing, but they have offset that, albeit not, as Andy says, like for like, but with some of the players that they've brought in. I think Matuidi from Paris, for what they paid for him, is one of the signings of the summer. I know his place had come under threat in Paris, but still think in the role that he plays in the midfield, he's one of the very best there is. I think he will be a really good fit for Juventus. Bernardeschi, they paid quite a lot, about 35 million euros to Fiorentina for him. So I think they've strengthened the squad, but the loss of Bonucci does offset that a little bit
It was a weird... The team last year, granted they got to the final and they were absolutely splendid through the competition, but it was still a bit square pegs in round holes in places, with Mandzukic in a wide position. We'd see occasionally Dani Alves more advanced than he might be normally. Do you see a more balanced midfield perhaps to Juventus this season, Andy?
That's something that they definitely needed to look at in this close season. I think, as Phil says, Matuidi is a huge step towards that. I think stuffing all the attacking players in in the team was really a recognition of our midfield needs work. Like I said, it was something for a good time, not for a long time.
Douglas Costa, also think that's an excellent upgrade in the wide position as well, having picked him up from Bayern, where I'm surprised as well they find him surplus to requirements. Barcelona, Phil, Neymar, massive loss. Ousmane Dembele, the replacement from Borussia Dortmund, but are Barcelona as strong as they were last season?
I'm not convinced. I think maybe long term they could be. I think Dembele, outstanding potential, but I still think at this relatively early stage of his professional career, it is only potential, and it's a huge investment in that potential. Whether this season we're going to see the very best of him slotting straight into the side, because effectively the way it's worked out, yeah, he is Neymar's replacement.
Pressure, isn't it?
It's huge pressure for him, and it remains to be seen whether he's going to be able to withstand that sort of pressure and deliver. He's got the ability, don't get me wrong, from what I've seen with him at Dortmund so far. Outstanding young talent. Not necessarily enough, I don't think, either to placate the Barcelona supporters after the departure of Neymar. I don't think they've been overly happy with a lot of the other business done. Verratti from Paris was a sort of summer-long target which never came off. Instead, they got Paulinho in from Guangzhou Evergrande. Again, is that going to be enough to placate those Barcelona supporters? Not necessarily a key point, but I think when you consider Barcelona as a club, you have to consider the mood around Camp Nou, the sort of vibe around the club. And at the moment, not overly positive, despite starting with a couple of fairly comprehensive, fairly comfortable victories in the Spanish Liga. They beat Juventus in the Champions Cup in the friendly series in July as well. But the summer-long pursuit, or certainly the latter part of the summer of Coutinho as well, and not being able to lure him from Liverpool, I don't think has done much to aid that mood either that I was talking about.
I want to stick up for Barcelona a little bit here, because it's clear that things have not gone smoothly. Of course, the departure of Neymar, we talked about Bonucci, but this is an absolutely huge blow on every level for them. This was the guy who dragged them through the knockout round tie with Paris Saint-Germain last season.
Yeah.
On his own. The team worked very hard, but it was Neymar's magic that got them through, as well as his work rate. So it is a huge task for Ousmane Dembélé to replace him. But I think it's more than just potential. I think he's a player who can already affect games at the top level. He was someone who was Dortmund's best player last season. It wasn't Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. It was him. And in his first season at a major European club, I think that's an extraordinary achievement as a teenager. Now he's 20 years old. He's ready for this. Now remember, Barcelona wanted him all along. He went to Dortmund because he thought he needed to play at a higher level, and he's met every target expected of him. So I kind of think that Barcelona have ended up a little bit further forward than they might have done, given the chaotic nature of some of their planning. So I think Dembélé is someone who'll be very good immediately, if not quite Neymar standard, and he'll be excellent for the next 10 years if they manage to hang on to him. And then you look at the other areas of the team, and they didn't get all the players they wanted, but they needed a right-back all last season. They've got Nelson Semedo, who's excellent for Benfica and already has good experience at UEFA Champions League level, and Paulinho, who's been outstanding for Brazil over the last couple of years, even if it didn't work out for him at Tottenham Hotspur, and they really needed to reinforce in midfield. So it's not gone as they planned or as they expected, but maybe they're a little bit further ahead of where they were last season.
Okay, let's look at the other teams in the group. Andy, can you tell us about Sporting and the shape they're in under Jorge Jesus, third season in charge for him there?
Yeah, and they've started very well. It's clear that the domestic championship is a priority for them, but I feel they've got a little bit more energy to them this season. Of course, Bas Dost has been scoring a lot of goals since he arrived. Of course, only Messi scored more goals than him in the European leagues last season. And you know, you look at what he's been joined by as well. I think Bruno Fernandes in midfield is a tremendous pickup. He started the season brilliantly and dictating games. Fabio Coentrão, if they can keep him fit, well, he's a real plus at left back, and he can add to the attack as well. So I think Sporting fans have a lot to be excited by, and it feels they're refreshed and renewed by making smart recruitment so far this summer.
There's awkward teams in this group for Juve and Barcelona, and Olympiacos is no different, Phil. No one likes going to Perez. It's always a tricky test away from home. What shape are they in at the moment, do you think, the Greek champions?
I think they're in good shape. I think they're a little unfortunate, actually, with the group that they've been drawn in, because I would have fancied them otherwise to be a surprise contender to qualify, actually, for the knockout stages. Something of a renaissance at the moment under Besnik Hasi, who's come in as the new manager. By their standards, they've spent big this summer, over €20 million, which I know by the current market maybe isn't anything like it, as much as a lot of the rival clubs in this competition. But by standards in the Greek Super League, it's a significant investment. They've brought experienced players in as well in European competition. The likes of Emmanuel Emenike, Vanis Adish has come in, Bjorn Engels, Zoros Judovic as well, having won 7 titles on the bounce in Greece, so they've got that momentum behind them. They beat Partizan and Rijeka in qualifying. I think they're in good shape. Having said that, I just think that the level of opposition they're going to face in Group D is daunting for them, so I can't quite see them qualifying, but they'll give Sporting a real run for their money in terms of that third place in UEFA Europa League qualification.
That's right, and if they can sneak the odd point off Barcelona or Juventus, and you look at some of the teams that have lost in Piraeus over the last couple of years,
absolutely,
yeah, including Juve, including Atletico, just a couple of months after they were UEFA Champions League finalists in Lisbon, and that was a really difficult UEFA Champions League debut for Jan Oblak out there. Maybe they can affect the group in their own way. I mean, I agree with Phil. I think the recruitment's really interesting. I'm really looking forward to seeing Vadis, who was excellent already in this competition for Legia Warsaw last season. I think there's some excitement there. And they've managed to hold on to Kostas Fortunis, which wasn't a given either.
Certainly. Some of you have been tweeting in. Some of you believe Barcelona are favourites to win this competition, including Roshan Shetty, who just says Messi, Suarez and Dembele are the reason that Barcelona should be considered favourites to the competition. Barcelona host Juve on match day 1, 12th of September. That's going to be our main commentary on Match Day Live, and we'll have updates from Olympiacos against Sporting as well. Juve, Barcelona to go through. Can we have a group winner?
I think Barca will just edge the group.
Oh, I think Andy's going to go Juve.
I think Barca will edge the group if they win on match day 1, which is the Match Day Live main commentary, of course, on the Tuesday. And you know what? I think this first game is absolutely enormous for Barcelona, with all those doubts over the summer. If they can go out there and beat Juve in the first match of the UEFA Champions League group, that will absolutely transform the mood around the Camp Nou.
Just a reminder, this is the Matchday Live UEFA Champions League group stage preview with me, Rob Daly, Andy Brassel and Phil Blacker as well. It's time to move on to Group E. Spartak Moskva of Russia, the new Russia champions. Sevilla, Liverpool, third seeded side in the group. And then Maribor of Slovenia as well. Worth remembering that Sevilla and Liverpool met in the 2016 UEFA Europa League final, with the Spanish side coming from behind to win that 3-1 at St. Jakob Park. 6 of those Sevilla players remain at the club, 10 of those are still at Anfield with Liverpool. Let's have a quick one on Spartak, actually, to start here, Phil. So they won the Russian Championship well short come the start of the season. Zenit flown ahead at the top of the table. Do you think Spartak are strong enough to get through this group?
No, in a word. I think they've had a really disappointing start to the season, probably beyond that, actually, to the point where Massimo Carrera, the coach who finally ended their long wait for the title in Russia, first time in 16 years last season that they won it, already in a big pressure because they've lost to Zenit already. Not just lost, they were hammered 5-1. They've lost a couple of derbies to Cisco and Lokomotiv Moskva as well at the start of the domestic season. 9 points from their first 8 games, all of which piles the pressure on coming in into this competition. In a way, that could work in their favour a little bit, because whereas in the Russian Premier League, as the champions, the pressure is on week in, week out. They're expected to get the victories they haven't been delivering. Maybe now, against opposition that will perhaps give them more of a chance to play a little bit, there's that extra little bit of freedom. But having said that, when you compare, I think, the squad in Moscow at the moment to some of the rivals they're going to be facing in Group E, they come up a little bit short for me. So much is going to depend on Quincy Promise, very much the main man in both really creating and scoring goals, I think, in this Spartak side. Stop him, you'll probably stop Spartak. A real feel-good factor in terms of playing in the UEFA Champions League, of course, because you cast your mind back just over 12 months. They lost, I think, in the third qualifying round of the UEFA Europa League to Ajax Larnaca, and here they are now getting ready to welcome Liverpool and Sevilla. Yeah. So if they can rise to the occasion, and they have the players of the calibre to do that, just not sure that the squad is strong enough. But yeah, they have the opportunity to have a real go at the competition.
Liverpool have a lot of fans in the Russian capital. It was something I was talking to Matchday Live's John Bradley about a while back. So the game, especially in Moscow with Liverpool, will be absolutely huge in this group, won't it?
Well, let's talk about Liverpool then. They have made additions. Mo Salah signed, Andy Robertson, the new left-back, in as well. And they signed Alexander Oxlade-Chamberlain from Arsenal at the end of the transfer window. They weren't in Europe last season, Andy, which probably helped them compete and get back into the UEFA Champions League. Do they have the squad to compete on all fronts again this season under Jurgen Klopp?
I think so. And it's a very, very convincing start to the season. I would pick them as the British side that will perhaps go furthest in this UEFA Champions League. I think because it's not realistic to expect them to win the Premier League in England, but this is something they can have a real go at. I feel that they've got adaptability now as well, the way that they can sit back and counter-attack, or that they can press teams from the very beginning, and Salah is huge in that. You couple him with Sadio Mane, Roberto Firmino, who's an incredibly intuitive centre-forward. That's a lot into the mix. And of course, Philippe Coutinho has got to be re-added to that as well. I think defensively, people have some questions over them, and fair enough. But if they attack teams from the off, like they're capable of doing, especially at Anfield, maybe that won't matter. They're certainly going to entertain anyway, which is something I'm really looking forward to. And that was so impressive in both of those games against Hoffenheim in the playoff.
Yeah, they were staggeringly good first half against Hoffenheim, especially. Also, there was a feeling that Liverpool probably needed another centre-back, who they didn't really recruit. But I did see Joe Gomez play for England under-21s the other night in that position, and he was fantastic. And that is probably his first position. I wonder if Klopp's thinking through the season he might be able to play there. That front three, Phil, probably matches, in terms of danger, almost any front three in Europe right now.
Fabulous the way they've started the season. Real signing in Salah, I think, up there with one of the best bits of business of the summer. I know they got it done fairly early. At that stage, maybe people thought they'd perhaps paid over the odds. I think the transfer fees we've seen since then have completely negated that argument. And as Andy mentioned, Coutinho to reintegrate into this side after the transfer speculation, the injuries in the early part of the season. You think now, given how well they've started domestically as well, that 4-3-3 formation seems to have fitted brilliantly. Actually, where does Coutinho get into that side currently at the moment? It's a wonderful dilemma to have, I guess, isn't it? Added to by the signing of Oxlade-Chamberlain, who I think will give them options in a number of different positions. I know he prefers to play in the centre of midfield, which is why he chose to come to Liverpool in the first place. So I think they strengthen the squad there. Defensively, though, as we've touched on, that for me is the major concern over Liverpool. They haven't strengthened the centre of that defence. They've got an issue at right back as well. Nathaniel Clyne hasn't featured this season because of injury, and it looks like it's more serious a problem than was initially feared, because I don't think he's even been named in the squad for the UEFA Champions League. So Joe Gomez, who you talked about, did a job at right back in the Premier League the other week. We'll be battling with Trent Alexander-Arnold, I think, for the starting role at right back. Two players of huge promise, but young players lacking experience at this level. And I think Liverpool, as Watford showed in the Premier League meeting right at the start of the season, can be got at from set pieces. I think there is a weakness maybe in the heart of that defence, but it'll be fascinating to see, won't it, if that attacking strength that we've talked about is able to offset that. I think it will. I think Liverpool are the best side in the group, and they'll win the section.
Okay, Maribor, the Slovenian champions, are also back in the UEFA Champions League. This is their third time in the group stage, and they're also in a group with Sevilla. Andy, how have Sevilla gone about their summer and the upcoming season?
Well, of course, it's a big change for them with Monchi going. That's far bigger than Jorge Sampaoli, even though it was terrific watching his first season coaching in European football. And I think Eduardo Berizzo is a really, really good replacement for him. Of course, he knows La Liga well. well, knows the players well, and constructs really enterprising sides. You know, there's still a sense that it's all coming together a little bit. But I think in terms of talent, they have pretty much everything you'd want. I think they've had a pretty productive window, and you look at the players who are there already, who really came through for them in the playoff round when it was far tighter than they wanted it to be against Başak Şehir. Wissam Ben Yedder is one of those. I feel he's one of those players who really flourishes in a 1-2 touch sort of system. Of course, he came through as a futsal player and came into professional football quite late, so for him that's absolutely ideal. He feels like a real Serie A player this year. And then you know you talked about in the 2016 UEFA Europa League final against Liverpool, that six players from that remain. Well, one of them left and came back in Eva Banega. And it's not often, I think, that you would let a player go on a free, sign him back for €9 million a year later and think, that's happy. Great business.
Yeah, exactly.
But he's so important to what they do. They really lacked his incision last year. And I think particularly when they didn't quite get it over the line against Leicester in the last 16, we should be talking about a team that were UEFA Champions League quarter-finalists, but it all fell apart from them in the last part of the first leg. And in the second leg against Leicester, those are mistakes that they won't want to make again. And I do feel that they've got enough in the squad to offer them some versatility in these different group matches.
Yeah, you mentioned it there as well. Nolito and Jesus Navas, back at the club, were pivotal in the late stages of their UEFA Champions League playoff tie to get them over the line. David Lawler's tweeted in to say, Liverpool can win the UEFA Champions League this season because Sadio Mane is the best footballer on the planet.
He is on his day.
He's absolutely sensational on his day. So here are the match day one fixtures. Spartak go to Maribor. Liverpool host Sevilla. Brilliant first game at Anfield at the UEFA Champions League group stage. It's going to be one of our feature matches on the show. Number one and number two in the group, please hear, gents.
Liverpool-Sevilla.
Liverpool-Sevilla as well, for me. Can't really make an argument otherwise.
How can I get you two to fall out? I've got to lay a trap. I'll work out to do it later in the show. So those games are on Wednesday, the 13th of September. Group F then. Let's look at this one. Another English side involved. Manchester City with Shakhtar Donetsk, Napoli, and Feyenoord as well. Napoli did actually get the better of Manchester City in the 2011-12 group stage. Let's hear from the Feyenoord head coach Giovanni van Bronckhorst first, who's been considering some of the key things his team will need to do in this competition.
I think it's important that we play well. The passing has to be neat, the tempo needs to be high, and I'm an advocate for good positional play. So the way we're set out on the pitch has to be correct. And I want us to create chances in every match. And that will be harder in some matches than in others. So the chances we get, we have to take. At some point, we will also play against an opponent that will be stronger than us. So we will have to take some steps forward in that regard to also be able to get results in the UEFA Champions League.
Ook in de Champions League resultaten kunnen halen.
Dutch champions, Feyenoord. It is their first group stage appearance since 2002-2003. Hard to believe, but they won the title last season, largely thanks to the late-season exploit of Dirk Kuyt, who has since retired. There have been big-name departures, but Sam Larsson's in from Heerenveen, and Steven Berghaus, his loan from Watford, has been made permanent. And that's good business for Feyenoord. They needed it.
They did. The departure of Dirk Kuyt, it was expected to an extent. He was obviously going to play a less important role had he stayed at the club. So understandable that he went out on that high with the hat-trick that clinched the title. But I just think his presence in the squad is a huge void to fill. And losing Terence Kongolo to Monaco, Rick Karlsdorp to Roma, they were so strong in those fullback areas, certainly going forward last season. Difficult to replace. It's another step up for Feyenoord. They finally ended that long wait for the domestic title in some style last season after a nervy last couple of weeks of the season. When you consider they're in the group with Manchester City and Napoli, though, such attacking talents that they're going to face, I do think they'll come up a little bit short at this level. They have young players with points to prove and real potential, and equally they have some experience in that side. Whether they have quite enough in the middle, if you know what I mean, to be genuine contenders, I'm not sure. But Nikolai Jorgensen in particular, the top scorer, is one that I'm really looking to see how he gets on stepping up at this level.
Well, they've got some stern opposition, including Napoli, as Phil mentioned there. Pep Guardiola, the Manchester City manager, says in the UEFA Champions League, you expect the first and second pot to be strong, but I think Napoli are one of the three best teams in Europe right now. We know Guardiola can be a little bit cute with his language in terms of watching teams. Napoli are thrilling to watch. Andy, how are they looking ahead of this campaign?
Terrific. They've started the season really well. And I think when you look at last season, they did an almost faultless season, apart from the bit where Arek Milik got injured and they tried to figure things out from there. You know, he was in a really rich vein of form. And long-term, it actually worked out OK for them because Milik being injured in a non-transfer window part of the season meant that they had to scrabble around elsewhere for a solution. It meant that they ended up using Dries Mertens as a centre-forward, and he's been absolutely unstoppable ever since. And now they've got to a point where they've got Milik fit again and they've got Dries Mertens playing as well as he ever has. Lorenzo Insigne is in his best spell for his hometown club in the last 12 to 18 months. It just looks a terrifically balanced side. They've not gone out and gone crazy in the transfer market in the summer. And they didn't need to. I think stability is working for them the same as it would work for Real Madrid or maybe to a lesser extent Tottenham. And it's just something where you feel this is a side that knows each other and the players know their roles absolutely perfectly. They're one of the best coach sides in the UEFA Champions League under Maurizio Sarri. And, you know, they were just unlucky to come up to against Real Madrid last season. I mean, it looks bad on paper, losing 6-2 on aggregate, but that was closer than it was suggested. And they had Real Madrid on the ropes, certainly when they were 1-0 up in the return leg at the San Paolo. So, for me, Napoli are going to be one of the teams to watch in this group stage. And I think Guardiola is right. They make this a must-watch group between four very attractive sides.
Are they better without Milik in the side then, Andy, do you think?
Yeah, I don't think he can be first pick, just because that front three of Callejon, Insigne and Mertens is
absolutely
terrific.
The understanding as well is unbelievable, isn't it?
It really is. And we've seen sides go to Manchester City, I think notably Dortmund, and give really strong front foot performances that City have found quite difficult to deal with. So, you know, I think we're maybe even looking at the group winners here.
Oh, OK. Manchester City will be fancying their chances of winning the group, Phil. And again, they've spent big sums of money, particularly recruiting at the back, because there were holes in that squad after many players left in the summer.
Yeah, they've spent big money, particularly on those fullback roles, as you alluded to, which they had to do. And I think because of that, bringing in the likes of Kyle Walker and Danilo Bernard Mendy as well, they are so much stronger in those positions. They've got so many attacking options as well, but potentially that could be part of the problem at the moment for Pep Guardiola. I think certainly judging from the early stages of the Premier League season, I'm not sure he knows his best team yet and how to fit those as many of those attacking
talents into
the
same side. Is he gonna,
well, not even that.
Because he went three at the back all pre-season. He started with three at the back, switched to four. He will change it, I'm sure. But is there a preferred system? And by playing three at the back, is he not utilising all his attacking?
Well, that's the problem for him, isn't it? I think he probably would think maybe that is the best way to go defensively. But then, you know, something has to give. Some of the big names that are not going to get a game. He started the season playing both Gabriel Jesus and Sergio Aguero. Difficult to leave either one of those out of the starting lineup. But already Aguero's found himself back on the bench. I think Leroy Sané had such a great season, or second half of last season, hasn't really been getting a game at the start of this season. Maybe he's been one of those that's missed out because of the changes in formation. And I think all this plays into Napoli's hands. I think as the season goes on, Manchester City have the strength and depth in the squad to be genuine contenders in this competition. But I think when you look at the head-to-heads with Napoli in Group F, because of the attacking talents of Napoli that Andy was talking about and the defensive deficiencies that I still think exist at Manchester City, that would set it up for Napoli. So I could see them winning the group, but I think of the two, maybe City would go further in the competition.
I wonder if Fernandinho is going to end up being a really, really important player for them this season. I mean, you look at Pep Guardiola's successful campaigns in the UEFA Champions League with Barcelona, and it's often been with a midfielder dictating from a central defensive position. So you look at Yaya Toure in 2009, 2011, it's Mascherano's turn for a lot of that campaign. So I just think that, you know, he's a player who's got great personality, great leadership skills, and you know he loves a midfielder in defence to keep the game flowing. And if Vincent Kompany's there's not an obvious leader to that defence. As Phil said, I think that could be decisive in this group. But going deeper in the competition, maybe Fernandinho could be more and more important. And of course, it's going to be big for him coming up against his former club, Shakhtar Donetsk.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about Shakhtar, Andy. I know you spoke to Darius Serna, key player for Shakhtar in recent years as well, recently. Do you think they're optimistic of getting through this tricky group?
Yes, I think they are, because they know it's going to be a really great atmosphere for them in the home games. Of course, they've moved to Kharkiv now, still not back in Donetsk, and that doesn't look like it's on the cards in the near future. But it's closer to home, Kharkiv. They feel they've got good support there. And in Lviv, they felt they had fans who filled the stadium but were maybe just interested neutrals. And Siona was saying that that's something that, that affected them, whereas this time they'll have a bit more of a bump, a bit more of a groundswell of support. And that's what they want, because if they're going to get where they want to go in this group, it has to be the home games. Now, Siona's kind of atypical of Shakhtar under Paulo Fonseca, because they've started leaning more heavily on their youth academy. Viktor Kovalenko is the most obvious one of those, but there are other ones coming through. They've still managed to hold on to Tyson, who's a huge player for them. And, you know, we know from seeing Shakhtar in European competition for well over a decade now, they play terrific, fast football. They're really, really good to watch. And what Fonseca's built after a difficult start, where they're eliminated from the qualifying rounds of the UEFA Champions League last season, has been absolutely extraordinary. He's done really well, and he'll be itching for a crack at this competition.
OK, here are the games for match day one. Shakhtar will host Napoli. Manchester City will go to Feyenoord on Wednesday, the 13th of September. First and second in the group, please, Phil.
Napoli and Manchester City.
The same, but I think Shakhtar could give City a bit of a problem.
Okay, so some people have even tweeted in to say that they believe that Manchester City can win it, including Sharon Chetty. Manchester City favourites to win it, that's all. OK, let's go on to Group G now. Monaco, Porto, Besiktas and RB Leipzig in their first ever European campaign make up this section. Worth remembering, this head-to-head, Porto beat Monaco 3-0 in the 2004 UEFA Champions League final under Jose Mourinho. Meanwhile, Pepe won the UEFA Champions League three times with Real Madrid, and he's back in the group stage again with his new club, Besiktas.
I am very happy that we have plenty of quality in the squad. We have a very intelligent coach when it comes to preparing for games, as well as analysing our opponents. Besiktas have to make history. I think we need to get through the group stage, though we have to be realistic about how hard it'll be. I think we have the quality to achieve it. Last year, Besiktas very nearly got through the group stage. So this year, I hope the club is able to do it, which will be very difficult compared to previous years.
It is a tough UEFA Champions League group stage this season. Pepe acknowledging that, having won the competition with Real Madrid last season, and aside from their brilliant signing videos that they released on Twitter whenever they got a brand new player in, they've actually done some pretty handy business, including Pepe, this window, Andy.
They have. Well, for me, he's still one of the very best centre-backs in the world. So that is an enormous signing for them, and it shows ambition. And you look at the way that they've been conducting themselves pre-season, not just with the signings, and of course, Jermain Lenz is another one of those, because he was Fenerbahce's best player last season.
Yep.
So that really hurts their local rivals and boosts them at the same time, bringing in a player who's used to the city, the environment and the league. I think the fact that they're going this big shows that they mean business in terms of being a club that creates a dynasty. Of course, they've gone out into China in pre-season, becoming the first Turkish club to go out there, and they're really trying to expand their name. This is absolutely capital for them, making a splash in the UEFA Champions League in terms of their self-image. And in terms of the fact that on match day six, they had it all in their own hands last season, and then it all fell apart in spectacular fashion at Dinamo Kiev. So they need to put that away. They had the second European disappointment in going out on penalties in the quarterfinals of the UEFA Europa League to Olympique Lyonnais. So this is a club that's got everything, really, to thrive at this sort of level. It's just, I think, breaking down a certain mental barrier. And it's going to be fascinating, because I think if you look at this amongst all the groups, this to me is the best balanced of all the groups. You know, last season you had the one with Tottenham, Leverkusen, CSKA Moscow,
and Monaco.
And Monaco have got it all to do all over again, really.
But let's talk about Monaco here, because they have seen players leave: Bernardo Silva, Benjamin Mendy, Kylian Mbappe now, and Bakayoko as well. They continue to do brilliant business, and they've started the Ligue 1 season in sensational fashion, Phil.
Seamlessly, despite all those departures. Yeah, this for me is definitely the closest group to call, the toughest of the lot. But Monaco still start favourites for me, because partly of what they did last season, partly because of the business that they've done in the summer, in kind of maintaining the momentum despite all those departures. It's given them a bit more freedom to rebuild the squad, of course, in other areas. Yes, there are players they lost that they wanted to keep, but equally I think there was an understanding most of those departures were likely, so planning was already in place. They've also done decent business the other way, bringing bringing in Youri Tielemans from Anderlecht, who I think, because of the gap left maybe by Bakayoko in midfield, will have a really important role to play in this campaign. They've kept Thomas Lemar, despite that late interest from Arsenal as well. There's still goals in the side with Falcao. They haven't skipped a beat so far, despite all those departures. Whether they're going to be able to maintain that right the way through the competition and maybe get as far as the semi-finals again, I'm less convinced, but I think they'll have enough in this group.
Yeah, never mind the players they've lost. The one they've kept, Fabinho, is absolutely key for me.
Yeah, you felt he was understated in terms of his importance if he had left Monaco.
Yeah, he's the man who knits it all together. I mean, yeah. Mbappe, even though he's a headliner, they can replace him. There are goals, as Phil says, from all over that team. Falcao, Lemar, Gabriel Bosilia, who's going to be fit very soon, and then you add to that Stevan Jovetic and Keita Balde. Yeah, yeah. And the thing is, these new signings, they've not blooded them in the opening part of the season. Youri Tielemans, as we record, is yet to start a Ligue 1 match. So I get the feeling that they're going to get better and better as the group stage goes on. And they've got players who know what their system is, who've retained that attacking power, and that they can add a few to that to make themselves even better. I think they'll win this group, and then I think they'll go on to make a big dent in the knockout stages as well.
Plucky youngster Falcao as well continues to establish himself as one of the top strikers around. He will face his former club Porto in this group, who he won the UEFA Europa League with. Andy, Porto, what condition are they in? Of course, fell short in trying to challenge for the Portuguese title last season.
Yeah, and a sort of mini revolution for them, really, with departures including André Silva. But they look in really good nick at the start of this season. Of course, a new coach in Sergio Conceição, who knows the club very well, and he's immediately established his imprint on the team. They're very attacking, very aggressive, and one of their major problems last season is that they couldn't get it over the line in tight games. Now, that's something they seem to be changing. And funnily enough, Vincent Aboubakar, who was on loan at Beşiktaş last season, has come back there and immediately become very, very important. So that's the sort of way of Portuguese football, that players who seem out of the picture get recycled. That's happened with Aboubakar. That's happened with Musa Marega, who's the backup to him and very fast and powerful as well. Ricardo Pereira, who's brilliant in two seasons loan at Nice and gives them an extra dimension at fullback. They're well stocked. You know, they're a really dangerous team in this group, I think.
And so are RB Leipzig, making their European debut this season, finished second to Bayern, 15 points behind them in the end in the Bundesliga, but nonetheless the closest challengers for the title. They've kept Naby Keita, who leaves next summer for Liverpool. They've kept Emil Forsberg, assist machine last season for them, and Ralf Hasenhüttl. They've also recruited very well. I actually am backing them to maybe even win this group. How do we mark their prospects, Phil, do you think?
I think they've got every chance. Really refreshing to see a side like this get their opportunity. Fully deserved, of course, given the Bundesliga campaign that they had last year. I think Naby Keita is going to have a huge season, will eventually be a really big signing for Liverpool, and I think his reputation is only going to be enhanced by his performances in this competition. I know that they lost the first league game of the season against Schalke. There's that old second season syndrome a little bit that is being pointed in their direction. But I think the fact that this is all fresh, it's a chance for these players to really go and grasp an opportunity in the UEFA Champions League. I can see them going through.
And the fact that they're a counter-attacking side really plays in their favour. We've already said that the teams in this group are going to want to come out and have a go at them. So that is something I think that's going to work really well for them. You think when Dortmund were in their last couple of years under Klopp, they did better in the UEFA Champions League than they did in the Bundesliga because they found sides willing to attack them. And I think that will work for Keita, that will work for Forsberg, that will work for Timo Werner, and that will work for Bruma as he becomes more and more important as they carry on in the group. I think they've got a great chance.
Found that with Leicester, didn't we, a little bit last season as well, as they entered the competition for the first time. And I think this is the summer where Ralf Hasenhüttl, their head coach, really becomes an international star. Let's look at the opening games then on match day one in this section. Wednesday, the 13th of September, Leipzig host Monaco. I mean, if you want to pick a slightly more obscure game to watch, definitely get on that. And then Porto take on Beşiktaş at home in Portugal. Who's going through here, Andy?
Monaco and Leipzig, but basically that's me saying Monaco and I don't have a clue because it's so difficult to choose between the last three. I think what's key in those match day one fixtures, I to really believe in Beşiktaş, I would want them to take something from the Dragão against Porto.
So that first game's key, basically.
Yeah, I think so. They're less trustworthy on the road than they are at their fantastic home arena.
I've already said I can see RB Leipzig qualifying, but I can't see Porto not going through, so I'm going to go Monaco-Porto.
Okay. I'm going to go Monaco, RB Leipzig for that one. And maybe Leipzig to win the group. Why not? Let's go on to the final group now. It is Group H. Now, this is the toughest group. I think we could probably all agree on that in the UEFA Champions League this season. Real Madrid, the holders, Borussia Dortmund, Tottenham Hotspur and Apoel of Cyprus. Harry Kane, the Spurs striker, tweeted after it. Great UCL draw, some huge names in there. Come on, you Spurs. Tottenham struggled in the group stage last season, Andy. They're back at Wembley in all fixtures this campaign. Spurs, a lot's been made of that. But in terms of bringing in players, something that Spurs fans have said is maybe we didn't sign enough before the end of the transfer window. Recruited at the back, have they done enough?
They got there in the end, and as I said earlier, I think stability is a very, very underrated thing. It's good for Real Madrid, and it's good for Napoli, and I don't see why it shouldn't be good for Spurs as well. I think Serge Aurier could be a really key player for them, especially with the aggression with which they like to attack down the flanks.
Fits the system perfectly, doesn't he?
He does, and some would even argue that he's an upgrade on Kyle Walker. So he'll be an interesting addition. I wonder if Davinson Sanchez, once he settles and they go with three at the back, if they could, that could give a little bit more freedom to Jan Vertonghen to bring the ball forward, which would be an interesting thing. It's something we saw a lot of him doing at Ajax. So I think there's plenty for Spurs to be optimistic about. I think as well, a lot of people around the clubs saying that Wembley counted against Tottenham last season. I mean, I heard from both people at Monaco behind the scenes there, and Kevin Campbell of Leverkusen told me that Wembley completely inspired them. I think with the size of teams you've got here, with Madrid and Dortmund, there'll be less of a wow factor. So that'll be less of a thing for Tottenham to go through. Although, of course, Dortmund will want to make reparation on that opening game week for the fact that the last time they were there was 2013 when they lost the UEFA Champions League final.
Some fantastic games to come in this group, isn't there? I think Tottenham will be so much stronger for last season's experience, not just the experience of playing at Wembley, because, as we say, they've not quite rectified that yet at the start of the Premier League season, but the experience of playing in a tough group stage in this UEFA Champions League. So I think they will have learned from that. I don't think huge numbers of new signings were needed by Maurizio Pochettino. I think they've done fairly good business. I know, again, they generally leave it late, and that was the case once more. Once they get that first win at Wembley under their belts, I don't think it's going to be an issue. It seems to be all everyone is talking about in terms of the negative side regarding Tottenham's chances this season. So I think once they put that to bed, they will get used to playing at the National Stadium, could make it work in their favour in the end. So I think they will be strong enough this year, stronger than last year, just to edge out Dortmund maybe.
The key signing perhaps will be Fernando Llorente, who's got great experience in UEFA club competition, and they needed someone who could take a bit of the burden off Harry Kane, and I think he's perfect to fit the bill.
Yeah, absolutely agree. They're in that group with Real Madrid, who we'll talk about in a moment. We've already discussed them to an extent. Borussia Dortmund, they've lost Dembele, but more great recruitment from the club this summer. Jadon Sancho, a surprise one at the end of the transfer window. England under-17 international from Manchester City, taking the number 7 shirt of Dembele. Borussia Dortmund, Andy, discuss.
Well, it's not about the 7 at the moment. It's about the 22. It's about Christian Pulisic, who has made the Dembele furore just seemed like nothing. He's made an enormous impact in the opening part of the season. Seeing Mario Götze back to his best, he wasn't that happy under Thomas Tuchel, and of course he had his fitness issues as well, as did Nuri Sahin. And seeing those two players become important, they're both important players in the dressing room, they're both important players in the recent history in the UEFA Champions League and otherwise of Dortmund, that I think that makes a huge difference in terms of leadership. And then you look at the other players, like Roman Bürki, Rafael Guerrero, when he comes back. They've got a year of extra experience on the clock. I think this is a very, very versatile squad. Maximilian Philippe is the next generation as well. It means they're not relying on Marco Reus, which is a good job, of course, because he's not registered for the first
When you've
part
got him, it's great, isn't it? But you have to accept
plan
almost.
Without him.
Yeah, without him, yeah.
I think so. And the fact that they've held on to Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. It's interesting. If you talk to people around Spurs, they will say that Borussia Dortmund are the best team they've played in the last 2 or 3 years. They were so impressive when they played at White Hart Lane in the UEFA Europa League the season before last. And people at Tottenham really, really remember that well.
I think it's important that Aubameyang stayed in particular. Julian Weigl fit again. Really impressed when I saw him fairly frequently last season. But for me, the interesting one at Dortmund is the coaching situation and how Peter Bosz gets on. Did brilliantly to take Ajax to a UEFA Europa League final, of course, last season, which is effectively what got him the job coming in for Thomas Tuchel. Has a little bit to prove, I think, for me, certainly in this first season, how he adapts to the Bundesliga and the UEFA Champions League. Although Ajax reached the final of that European competition, he didn't get them in right at the start of his reign in the UEFA Champions League. I think he probably put that to bed with what he went on to achieve afterwards in Europe. But for me, how he gets on, how he sort of imposes his own philosophy on this Dortmund side, with the quality of play that he's got, it should work well, but it still should, rather than any firm evidence yet.
Yeah, his good work with youth players, I'm sure, was key in him getting the job in Germany. Meanwhile, young Marco Asensio for Real Madrid, of course, we all remember, came on and scored in June's UEFA Champions League final to cap a season during which he started to make a real impact at the Bernabeu.
Well, it's been a terrific year for me. I had a great end to the season, playing more and enjoying more playing time in important games like in the UEFA Champions League final. I think it's been a very positive year for us, very positive for the club, because Real Madrid hadn't won that double for many years. We won La Liga and the Champions League, which is something very important and historic for Real Madrid. I'd always dreamt of lifting the UEFA Champions League trophy, and that dream has come true.
Well, he's really contesting now, Gareth Bale, for a starting role, you'd imagine, at Real Madrid, Marco Asensio. And he's taken many of the headlines ahead of this season, Andy, because not just the goals he's scoring, tremendous goals he's scoring. They're always spectacular. In a window where Real Madrid haven't done much business, he did play, of course, last season. He feels like a new body to add into the starting 11.
Yeah, he does. And, of course, he started last season brilliantly. We can't forget that he scored the opener in the UEFA Super Cup against Sevilla. But this time, he's absolutely not taking no for an answer, is he? And Zinedine Zidane, that's the major thing he's done at Real Madrid, created this situation where everyone feels equal, where everyone feels as if they can chisel out a place. And it's just brought those performance levels up from everyone. I think Isco's another great example, of course, that little bit higher. There's great competition. Marcos Llorente didn't go anywhere in the end, so there's even competition for Casemiro's role, as you were saying earlier. Teo Hernandez has come in, although as Roberto Carlos told me last month, Marcelo is the boss and there will be no getting past him. Marcelo's been enormously important for them over the last year and a half, in particular, of course. It's just really hard to spot a weak spot in Real Madrid. I can't comprehend any language in which they're not the enormous favourites for this group and the competition as a whole.
You feel similar, Phil.
I do. I think they've got even stronger from last season because of the development of the younger players rather than relying on the big money signings, which has, of course, previously been the case. And maybe to an extent there are question marks over all of their traditional rivals in this competition, whereas Real Madrid, you can't really make a case for any lingering doubts over weaknesses in that squad. So for me, they are very much the team to beat. History would suggest it's going to be extraordinarily difficult, but I just think, having finally become the first side in the UEFA Champions League era to win it back to back, that they can go on and make it three in a row. I think Bayern was it 74, 76, the last side to do that. I really think this Real Madrid team is good enough to be talked about in generations to come. Remember that era when they were the dominant side again.
Especially after Barcelona have had their recent spell of dominance. Apoel take on Real Madrid. Not the first time that these two sides have met, Andy.
No, 2012 quarterfinals, of course, and they made it tough for a while for Real Madrid. I spoke to Nuno Moraes, their experienced midfielder, about this recently. Of course, came through at Chelsea, and now he's been there for 10 years in Nicosia. And he's part of a club that is not just very experienced on paper at this level, but the current squad is very experienced. I think that's important. Look at players like Igor Di Camargo, who's done it for Standard Liège, amongst others. Boy Waterman, of course. And that will help them. They will hope that the other three take enough points off each other, I think, that they've got a chance of the UEFA Europa League. But it's going to be enormously tough, even if they do have, you know, a very unique atmosphere behind them in Nicosia, which will be difficult for those other teams to go to.
Absolutely. So Real Madrid host Apoel on match day one. Dortmund go to Spurs, which is our main commentary match on Wednesday the 13th of September. Glenn believes Real Madrid will win the competition again. Good squad experience and momentum. Jordi says Real Madrid for the three-peat, as they have by far the best team once again. And Adil says Real Madrid again because simply they have Ronaldo and Zizou. We've barely even talked about Ronaldo on the show, but nonetheless, who's going through the group and in what positions?
Real Madrid will win it. I think second place will depend potentially on that main commentary game on match day one, Tottenham-Dortmund. And I'll just go Tottenham.
OK, Andy?
Madrid-Dortmund. Despite the fact that it was the other way round in the UEFA Champions League group last season, wasn't it? So not to be taken for granted by Real Madrid.
Okay, I'm having that as well. So that is Group H, and that's all eight groups in the UEFA Champions League this season. Next, we'll hear more from the best of the best in last season's competition.
European football is more diverse and multicultural than ever. Our competitions and grassroots projects feature players and fans from all backgrounds. And for UEFA, it's important to communicate that football is for all. Respect is a social responsibility initiative launched in 2008. For the last 4 years, this initiative has featured the message, No to Racism. UEFA is now evolving and expanding this message in an effort to promote inclusion, diversity and accessibility across not only ethnicity, but also gender, age, sexual orientation, all abilities and social backgrounds. The new campaign gives all football lovers in Europe a voice to share what football means to them. The new Respect campaign is called Equal Game. Because everyone is entitled to enjoy football, no matter who you are, where you're from, or how you play. On the pitch, we're all the same.
Well, last season we were treated to some wonderful goals in the UEFA Champions League, and one of them has won the prestigious UEFA Goal of the Season. Here's Chris Parrott with more.
Strikes from all of UEFA's club and national team competitions were eligible for the award. So it was a hard task to even get on the shortlist for the 2017-18 prize. Seven goals were eventually chosen, and after a narrow public vote, there was only one winner.
Here's Mandzukic. Oh, it goes for goal! Sensational equaliser! Mandzukic with the overhead kick beats Navas to level for Juventus. That is a world-class finish!
Mario Mandzukic's magic in the 2017 UEFA Champions League final against Real Madrid got 26% of the votes. Moussa Sow's overhead kick during Fenerbahce's UEFA Europa League clash with Manchester United came a very close second, with Casemiro in third after his goal for Madrid against Napoli. Elsewhere, it was another red-letter day for Cristiano Ronaldo, who won the UEFA Men's Player of the Year award.
Well, to reach this magnitude of trophies, it's hard work and dedication. I play in an amazing team, Real Madrid. For me, it's always motivation to play what I love to do, which is to play football. I love to be on stage, I love to score goals, I love to win trophies, collective and individual too. So I'm blessed, I'm so happy to be here again. It's a great moment for me right now.
Dutch star Lieke Martins picked up the women's prize for helping her country win UEFA Women's Euro 2017. And for the first time, there were also four positional awards for the UEFA Champions League. Gianluigi Buffon was voted the best goalkeeper in last season's competition. Sergio Ramos won the Defenders' Prize. Luka Modric the Midfield Award. And Ronaldo was celebrating again as the best striker.
Chris Parrott reporting. Andy, Phil, any arguments over Mario Mandzukic winning best goal? I think it was the best one of last season.
On the biggest stage as well.
On the biggest stage. I'm worried it'll sort of get lost in the memory because it was a...
But at the time, it was the equaliser, wasn't it? And it was so significant. But you're right now, having gone on to lose that final 4-1, you tend to forget just what a brilliant goal
like
it was.
Like Zidane's volley against Leverkusen, if that had been the losing, say 2-1 and they'd lost, I think...
Oh, please, let's not even talk about that. That'd be a crime against football.
Okay, gents, let's talk about transfers now. Fantasy football is back on UEFA.com this season. You can play on the website. What players, what transfers should they be looking to make? Any smart signings? Feel no pressure.
Somebody that Andy mentioned earlier for Sporting, I think, strikes me as maybe one of the best signings of the season. So I think in the fantasy game, Bruno Fernandes, €8.5 million. Talking value for money from Sampdoria to Sporting. Impressed at the European Under 21 Championships. Was in the Portugal senior squad actually for the first time in the most recent international break. Really want to watch for Sporting.
Andy, who have you got your eye on then?
No Portuguese bias here, but I would go for Bruma from Leipzig. I think he's going to make a huge impact.
Do you think he'll start there, yeah?
Well, that's right. He might not even do so. So for that reason, he could be a bargain pickup. He's one I'm going to be looking at. Also, in terms of signings, Stevan Jovetic, who I think will be a really big player for Monaco this season. He's almost slipped in under the radar, hasn't
he? Him and Falcao, they can play together, do
yeah,
you think?
Yeah, they can, because he's got a similar style to Valère Germain, who, of course, moved on to Olympique de Marseille, who will be in the UEFA Europa League this season. And, in fact, Jovetic was recruited deliberately as a replacement for Germain rather than Kylian Mbappe. That's worth noting.
OK, very interesting indeed. OK, are there any other up-and-coming young players perhaps we should be looking for? I feel Marco Asensio is almost too on the radar now. Who are you thinking, Andy?
Well, we've seen quite a lot of him already in the UEFA Champions League, but Gelson Martins, who gave such a brilliant performance at the Bernabeu against Real Madrid in the start of last season, I think he's one to watch.
Not a new name, but a new competition for him. I think this is the year where Marcus Rashford is really going to make a major difference in the UEFA Champions League. Of course, it was the UEFA Europa League which saw him forge his reputation a couple of seasons back. I think now he's at the stage where he is really going to take this competition by storm.
We always see one team sort of break away and do better than expected. Perhaps Leicester City you could point to last season. Maybe even Monaco, given what we thought might happen at the start of the campaign. Is there any side who you think could have a particularly decent run?
We've already predicted that they'll qualify, so it seems cheating a little bit. But I think Napoli are very, very interesting to watch this season. I expect them to go not just to win the group, but to go deep into the competition.
And of the lesser fancied teams, they've got a real battle to qualify, but I think Basel are going to be punching above their weight this season. They're going to ruffle a few feathers, certainly in Group A, and be right in the mix for qualification.
I might go RB Leipzig. I fancy them to have a very good season in the competition. Eventual winners, I've got a feeling you're both going Real Madrid, even though it would be three in a row.
Afraid so.
Yep, Real Madrid for me.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, I think that's all of our predictions
but
in
Rob,
10
we can't let you get away without having a prediction. We can't let you get away without having a prediction. Come on, who's going to win it?
Let's say Juventus, because why not? I think they're better balanced this season. They've got the experience. It's Gigi's last year, probably. Said 99.9% sure he's going to retire at the end of the season.
It's meant to be.
It's meant to be, surely, Gigi. Gents, thank you very much. That's all we have time for on UEFA Champions League Match Day Live podcast. Remember, you won't miss any of the competition this season. You can listen via the official UEFA Champions League app on your mobile or through the Match Centre on UEFA.com on every night of football in the competition. On Match Day 1, four brilliant, fantastic games that we're featuring. Barcelona versus Juventus is our full match commentary on Tuesday, the 12th of September. Plus, we have extended updates as Manchester United make their return to the competition, taking on Basel. And then on Wednesday, the 13th of September, it's commentary of Spurs versus Dortmund at Wembley, plus the key action from Liverpool against Sevilla. It's sure to be an enthralling start, so make sure you join us from 19:30 Central European time on both those days and throughout the season. But for now, from Phil Blacker, Andy Brassel, and myself, Rob Daly, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to UEFA Champions League Matchday Live.